We're joined now by Andrew Fisher, who is Executive Director of Ecological Farming, which is out in California. I knew Andrew from his work on hunger for many years and his role with the Community Food Security Coalition. He's worked in the anti-hunger field for 25 years. And as a researcher, organizer, policy advocate. And he's also author of The Big Hunger, The Unholy Alliance Between Corporate America and Anti-Hunger Groups. We've been covering a lot of stories here in the Capital District of how hunger has substantially increased during the COVID crisis, and the lines at the food pantries and at these food bank operations has tremendously expanded. You know, what's sort of your response to sort of this increase of providing food during the COVID crisis? Is that the right way to solve the problem?
Yeah, thanks for having me on, Mark. I appreciate it. You're absolutely right that the number of people who are be considered food insecure or hungry has increased dramatically during the pandemic, in the past 8 or 9 months or so. And what we've seen, the response has been, as a great increase in the amount of emergency food or food charity being put through the system. And that's being done in part because the Trump administration has been derelict in its duty to take care of people who are suffering, who are food insecure. So it's a less than ideal situation. We're seeing what a system roll out in hunger relief as it should be doing. You know, it's called the emergency food system, and this is certainly an emergency. So we're seeing them do what they're supposed to be doing. But, you know, my concern is that we continue down this path and continue growing the charitable food sector into the future beyond the pandemic. We all know, and everybody in the sector who works in the sector knows, that you can't food bank your way out of hunger. We know that, you know, that charity is not justice. And what we need in this country are higher wages. We need more federal food programs. We need affordable housing and universal healthcare. We need all those things that help people get out of poverty and prevent hunger in the first place. But unfortunately, that's not been the response for the moment. And we need to keep that in our mind, that we need to get beyond charity.
You know, one of the things I used to explain to people is like, well, you hear this word food bank, you may want to focus on the word food, but many of us in the anti-hunger community focus on the word bank, and that the food banks are more reflective of sort of the corporate nature, both of our society, but also the food industry, and that often, you know, the members of the board of directors of the food banks, you know, weren't particularly excited to be looking at issues such as how do we, raise the minimum wage, or how do we, you know, sort of tax the rich. Has that sort of, you know, conflict of interest, eroded over the years, or is that still a big concern?
You know, I appreciate the question, Mark, because I know you were involved in Occupy Wall Street movement back in the day. So no, I call those connections the hunger industrial complex, that web of connections between big business and anti-hunger groups and the government, which keeps poverty in place and actually keeps anti-hunger programs in place rather than trying to solve the problem. So I've done research on who's on the board. Just for example, I've done research on who's on the board of food banks around the country, and there's 200 of them. I was able to find data on the vast majority of them. And I found that of those 2,500 food bank board members, about 1 in 4, 1 in 5 worked at a Fortune 1000 company. So you have people who are, you know, vice presidents or senior managers in big industry. And they're sitting on the banks of food banks, on the boards of food banks, excuse me, and they're actively preventing those food banks from taking a stance on such policy issues as raising the minimum wage, because oftentimes they work at a grocery store, and those grocery stores are very sensitive to the prices of labor. So they don't want to contravene, they don't want to contradict their employer's economic interests. So then you have food banks becoming very middle of the road, very conservative institutions, if you will, who are not really striving to prevent hunger. They're just feeding the people in the line rather than trying to shorten the number of people in the line,
You know, one of the issues you raise is also how do you treat, you know, the participants, you know, at these programs, and, you know, the concern that even the programs that may try to be a more open group end up, you know, somewhat having some, I don't know, racist or patriarchal, you know, concerns. You know, what can, you know, these emergency food programs and food banks do to, you know, better treat their participants more as, you know, equal participants and, you know, not somebody they're handing a bag of food to?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think you see that there's a stigma in going to your local food pantry. You see that, you know, perhaps people there who are the recipients are being treated less than. So I think it's a struggle. It's a struggle. I mean, I'm white, I'm middle class. I've worked as a volunteer at food pantries, and I found myself in these power dynamics of having to control what the recipients of that food pantry, what the food that they get, who are often African American, for example. And it puts me in a very uncomfortable power dynamic, racially especially. So I think, you know, there are food banks around the country, such as Oregon, that are really concerned about and looking at those racial dynamics. I think it's an increasing concern even within Feeding America at the national level about how do you overcome those issues. But it's very much entrenched in the system, just as it's entrenched with the police. So there's I think you can make the argument, if you're going to get pretty radical about it, that food banks are grounded in structural racism and maintain that system of structural racism, because they're not helping people build wealth or build power. They're just giving people a box of food until tomorrow. So charity is not changing. Charity is not creating justice. Charity is not providing any kind of social change. It's just acting as an out so that we don't have to do that change.
Now, many people, of course, are relieved that it appears that Donald Trump may vacate the White House, next month. But it looks like the new head of the Secretary of Agriculture is the old head of Secretary of Agriculture, Tom Vizslack, actually former graduate of Albany Law School. Is he going to, you know, challenge sort of the domination of agribusiness on our, you know, food policy as reflected particularly in the Farm Bill?
So I worked with Tom Vilsack when I was a Community Food Security Coalition during the Obama administration. He's a great guy, wonderful person, respect him a lot. But he comes from Iowa. He's old governor of Iowa. He's very much tied into agribusiness. And what we saw when he was there was, yes, under his administration, they did the Know Your Farmer, Know Your Food initiative that Deputy Secretary Kathleen Merrigan led. But no, he was very much tied into promoting and protecting genetically modified foods and corporate agribusiness. So I don't see him rocking the boat much. I don't see that as being in his portfolio of interest.
You know, we're at this moment where we're hopefully going to emerge in the next 6 months or so from a COVID pandemic, which has triggered an economic crisis, tremendous increase in hunger and poverty, and people losing income. You know, how can we use this moment to sort of create, you know, that better world that, you know, reflects sort of the goals of the Black Lives Matter movement, or, you know, even the old Occupy Albany? Is this a moment where we can actually address sort of the issue of income inequality?
You know, Sir Winston Churchill, not the most radical of people, once said, never let a good crisis go to waste. So it is my concern that we are letting this crisis go to waste and not calling out for structural reform. We're just kind of doubling down on those same old tired strategies that are at hand. So I do see a lot of potential. I do for not going back to normal, but for reimagining the future of where we should be and where we should go. This is a perfect moment to do it. We've seen we've seen how the food system has failed in many ways, with a number of farmers who are struggling to sell their crops, with crops being plowed under, with the food workers being the most, you know, the essential workers not being paid essential wages and being the most vulnerable in terms of COVID, with communities of color, with people of color being the most vulnerable to COVID as well. So I think the time is ripe for a kind of a more global analysis and a global take at the issues. And, you know, one can only hope that the Biden administration, I'm hopeful that the Biden administration will look at things in a little bit different light than the Obama administration did, and certainly the way the Trump administration did.
Well, let me jump in here for a second just to say we've been talking with Andrew Fisher, author of Big Hunger, and this is Mark Dunley for